Hey there, friends. Welcome to the Being Brown and Bold podcast. We're so glad you're here for all of our amazing conversations about stepping out of our comfort zone, being bold, and taking chances. And now, here's your host, Jess Thomas.
Today, I get to chat with Pooja Bavishi. She is the founder and CEO of Malai, which is an artisanal ice cream company with flavors inspired by nostalgic aromatic spices and South Asian ingredients based in Brooklyn, New York. She founded Malai because desserts bring people joy and she wanted to be in the business of delivering happiness. She won on Food Network's Chopped Sweets Edition. She went to college in her home state at UNC Chapel Hill. She has her master's from London School of Economics and her MBA from NYU. She and her ice cream has been written up everywhere, and she's been known in Inc. magazine for one of the top 100 founders for women, as well as everything to the New York Times. And if you have not tried her ice cream, you are totally missing out. So it is so great to have you here on the podcast today, Pooja.
Jess, thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here.
So to get started, I think names are really important, especially in our brown communities. So tell us about your name, how to pronounce it, what it means, how you got it.
By saying I love my name. I love that it's so quintessentially Indian. So Pooja means prayer or devotion. My parents named me Pooja because my mom really loved the name. She was thinking about naming my older sister Pooja, but my family's Jain and my sister was born during a Jain holiday. And so they picked something that was more emblematic of that. But then I was born on Mahashivratri. My mom already loved the name Pooja and she thought that it was like completely fit with the day I was born. So named me Pooja and I love it because I love that it's unique. I mean, I've obviously gotten a lot of jokes about it, Pooja and you know, poo and like stuff like that. That is something I've always been super confident in, even though I wasn't confident in other things. And I've always, always loved my name. And then my family's Gujarati. And Bavishi is quite a unique Gujarati name. It's not that common. And the first part of it, Bavish, means 22 in Gujarati. And so my ancestors came from these 22 villages and they were known as Bavishis. And so I've taken part of that and turned it into the corporate name of my business. So my business is called 22 Desserts.
That's so cool. I had no idea. You know, Even though we're both Indian, and I don't know if other people realize this, there are so many different cultures within India. And I know zero about Gujarati, about Jain. Like I grew up in an Irish, Italian, Catholic neighborhood. And the only Indians I knew were Malayali Christian. And it wasn't until college I met Gujaratis. And over the pandemic, that was one of the things I learned a lot more about on Instagram, following different people about other states and within the states, all the cultures. So that's really cool. I had no idea. That's amazing. Okay. So the ice cream business is called Malai. Tell us about that.
So Malai, the truth is that I don't really remember when I didn't call it Malai. Like I had the idea, I started the business and it was always called Malai. And so in my mind, I didn't have this like brainstorming session or I didn't have anything that turned it into Malai. I love the word Malai. It translates directly to cream, but it also can mean the best of something, right? The cream of the crop. Yeah. And so I love that name for an ice cream business. It also sounds, to me, it sounds so inviting. It's like such a soft word. It sounds a little luxurious. And I wanted the feeling, the brand feeling to always be like homey and inviting and like comforting. And I felt like the word Malai kind of was representative of all of those things. And so I just knew from the very beginning it would be called Malai.
Yeah, I love it too. And then, and even when I see your branding and your packaging, it just looks so beautiful and inviting. So yeah, it is the perfect name. It is the cream of the crop.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. What does it mean to be Pooja?
Man, that's a tough question. I don't know. I think that I've been thinking a lot about who I am in this world, lately especially. And I, you know, obviously, just like everyone else, my past experiences have shaped me into who I've become. And I think about how, you know, Malai is such a big representation of who I am. But how I got here was just a deep sense of curiosity. I think more than anything, I would describe myself as a curious person. I'm really interested in learning about new things. And I've said this so many times, but if someone is talking about something that they are truly passionate about, whether I care about that subject or not, I can listen to them talk forever. Like, I'm just so curious about other people's passions and other subjects. And certainly when people talk with, you know, excitement and enthusiasm about something, I could listen to that forever. And an example of that is my hairdresser, my person who cuts my hair, absolutely loves blow drying hair. And she loves talking about it while she's blow drying my hair. And I could listen to that like for hours on end. She is so passionate about it. She's just so, so passionate about it. And I love that. I love that like people are able to find that passion. So it took me like, it didn't take me very long to find my passion. I love dessert. I have a very big sweet tooth. I loved baking growing up. I loved making desserts. I love hospitality. I think a lot of people in the food industry, their origin story takes them back to just like really having a deep love of hospitality and like inviting people over, making them happy, making them feel welcome, sharing a part of themselves with them. And I love that from the very beginning. And I knew at some point in my future, I wanted to have this dessert business. I just didn't know what that looked like. And, you know, my life took me in different directions, all of which, like the career that I had, I loved. And kind of running parallel to that, I had this really deep, again, curiosity for my parents' heritage, for my heritage, where my parents grew up, where they brought all of these traditions from. And it was almost as if I grew up feeling like I missed out on something, that like I didn't get to experience what they experienced. I didn't get this full self of like being completely and totally Indian. And it wasn't until that I started Malai where it like felt like me in a product, right? Like ice cream is universal, but it's also so completely Americana. Like anywhere you go, you find people who love ice cream, and you also find ice cream shops and you find local ice cream shops, and it's so Americana. And to flavor it with Indian spices, it felt like me in a product, but it also felt like the first time that I was embracing who I am, right? Like it was Indian American. Like I am not, like, even though I felt this like nostalgia for my parents' culture, like I'm not Indian. I didn't grow up there. And the way I grew up is valid and it's legitimate and it should be celebrated. And so that's what I've always felt that Malai represented.
That's awesome. Yeah, I feel that too, because I love being Indian, but I really know so little. And what I have found, the India and the Indian experience that my parents would talk about when we go today, it's not like that at all. Like where they grew up and the neighborhoods and it's a different kind of India.
How they did things. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Of course.
I remember eating ice cream in India and it was more like milk, ice milk, the texture of it. And this is in Kerala on the streets. But I remember loving it. It was not creamy. But there was something about, and I'm sure it's the milk that they use. Yeah. But it's such a strong memory. And I bet you if I go now, like they'll have Haagen-Dazs or something.
For sure. I mean, like, I don't think I was ever trying to, not even I don't think, I was never trying to recreate an ice cream experience in India or ice cream flavors from India. What I was trying to do, I think from the very beginning, I always was very clear on having two separate goals, and the overarching goal and kind of the minutia everyday goal. And the overarching goal has always been to change the way ice cream is viewed upon. In this country, hopefully the world, right? Like I think that it's really interesting how ice cream is one of the only food categories where you go into a shop and you expect to see certain flavors. You expect to see the cookies and cream. You expect to see chocolate, vanilla. When you don't see them, you get categorized as an other. But trying to do when I started in Malai is we already know that millions of people in this country enjoy these flavors on a daily basis. We also know that over a billion people around the world enjoy these flavors on a daily basis. Why is it not part of the mainstream? Why does it feel exoticized, quote unquote, right? Why does it feel like it's other when actually it should feel as part of the mainstream as everything else, right? It should feel not out of the ordinary to see a flavor like carrot halva on a shelf. It shouldn't feel out of the ordinary. And so it was always this macro goal, to overarching goal, to change the way ice cream is perceived. And then where my hospitality kind of passions come in is that the everyday goal is that someone is spending a minute, couple moments with us, that they're expecting to experience joy. They want to experience joy in that moment, and they're spending it with us. Yeah. And so create the best quality product that there is, right? Create the best version of ice cream there is, because they don't have to spend that moment with us. They can spend that moment somewhere else, but they're choosing to spend it with us. So that's where the hospitality comes in, that make them feel welcome, make them feel like this isn't other. They feel like it's not other. They chose you. Make the best quality scoop there is.
When I came to your shop, I totally felt it was such a warm, inviting space. And I definitely wished I could like sit there for hours and like slowly like savor my ice cream. And I think you have achieved that in this one store, but we'll talk about other stores later. And I was in Manhattan, but I missed when you did have your pop-up spot at the pier. But I'd imagine like you're set up, and you're so good at, I mean, I guess you call it marketing, but it's creating. I think that that's your artistic background, that you know how to, like the colors, everything, make people feel welcome. And I so appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I think that I had a vision of how I wanted the brand to look and feel, but I don't have the expertise in that. And that's where my team comes in, where they are really good at what they do. And they also believe in Malai the way I believe in Malai. And they are the ones that are like on day in and day out executing this vision.
Which, having a great team, I would imagine, because I know in the early days, it was just you. Which is
correct.
Insane.
For the first couple of years, it was just me. And I, you know, we just celebrated our 9-year anniversary. Crazy to think about. Thank you. And yeah, like those early years, I don't know, just the other day, my director of operations was pushing a cooler. And he was like, "Do you know how heavy this is?" And I was like, "Actually, I do.
Yeah,
I do, because this is all I did for the first 3 years of Malai. Like, I would rent U-Hauls, I would push coolers out, I would, you know, lift them up myself, and like, I would build a tent, and it was really, really labor intensive, and it was a lot of hard work, but it was also necessary. Like, that was what was necessary at that time, and." I'm really proud of those years. I'm glad that we've grown since then. But like, those were foundational years for us. So I look back at those fondly.
Your ice cream is eggless. And then the old me before 2020 would have been like, oh yeah, because if people have allergies. But I'm guessing that's not the reason why it's eggless. So tell us a little bit like how your cultural heritage has even informed the actual making of the ice cream.
Yeah, absolutely. So my family, like I said, is Gujarati Jain. And so a lot of that population is vegetarian and does not consider eggs to be vegetarian, including a lot of my extended family. I am vegetarian myself, but I do eat eggs. But I knew that that would be a barrier for a lot of people. And so I didn't feel like it was fair to pull from my culture, to be inspired by my culture, and then make this exact product inaccessible to those people who inspired me. And so it was a very early on decision that I made that everything that we make, everything is eggless. And so all of our cakes are eggless, our baked goods, our ice cream sandwiches, our toppings, like that is one thing that you will not find in any one of our products is eggs. And so you know, to your point, as we, you know, sold more and became more well known, it was very clear that a lot of people also had egg allergies. And so it became accessible to a larger portion of population than I had even thought, which was good. But yeah, the initial reasoning behind it was this.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I tried a bunch of flavors, and I know usually, like, the difference between vanilla ice cream and French vanilla ice cream is that they add the egg to make it richer. Right. And I would say, like, all the flavors were so rich to me. If you had not told me, I would never have known, because I think a lot of ice creams have like a custardy base with the egg. Yeah. But you captured that magic. I don't know how you did it, but you totally did it.
Well, I'll also say that, you know, eggs, obviously, like, they're a stabilizer and they're an emulsifier, and so they add to the creaminess, absolutely. But they also have a flavor. And so, you know, my whole thing was to highlight these spices, to highlight these South Asian flavors and ingredients, and they were more muted. Like, I did try an egg base, like, when I first got started, of course, like, I was trying everything and then made this decision. But I also noticed that the flavor was more pronounced when I used an eggless base.
Oh, that's neat. Okay. I haven't made ice cream in the longest time. I need to figure out how I'm going to change my way of doing it.
I have a cookbook coming out next year. I'll send one, obviously.
Really?
I'll send one.
That's amazing. I didn't know that was in the works. Yay.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I just turned in my manuscript last week. It was a big deal.
Congratulations. Wow.
Thank you.
And I know, again, how hard you work. I can't even imagine how many test tries of like every recipe you've gone through for all of that. And okay, here's a question. In general, lots of chefs put out recipes, but is their exact recipe what you put in the cookbook? Because I feel like, wouldn't that be giving away like your secrets?
Yeah, well, so no, it's not going to be the exact recipe. And the reason for that is that we're using industrial size machines, right? So like, that changes the formula. It is the very exact recipe to the T, the exact recipe of when I was developing our ice cream base. So when I was using a KitchenAid homemaker, home ice cream maker, what was I putting in there to create this formula for a bigger business? That is the recipe. So it is a foundation of Malai for sure. It is the original recipes of Malai. It will taste the same, but it'll taste like it's a better quality product for a homemaker rather than for like a business.
Right. And I know that a lot of people buy cookbooks because they're beautiful and they're inspired, but they like don't actually cook out of it. Cause some people are like, but then you won't go to the business. I'm like, you know, if you're in Brooklyn, you're not going to be like, oh no, I can make that at home. So yeah.
Yeah. I think a cookbook was a dream of mine for so long. And you can't fear that, right? You can't fear the fact that like, and the thing is that like, we are around to provide moments of like surprise and delight and all of those things. So like all of our flavors are not going to be in there, and we're going to keep on creating new things, and we'll give you a reason to come to the store. There won't be any reason to not come to the store, but I'm glad that like people who haven't been able to try Malai or it's not as accessible to them, they'll have a way to get Malai closer to them. And, you know, my goal is for as many people as possible to try Malai and our recipes. And so this is a way to do that as well.
That's awesome. I'm so excited. Okay. When you were little, what did you actually imagine your life would be like when you grew up? Like, did you,
oh God. Not like
did
this.
You hope to have an ice cream shop when you grew up and, you know,
No, I think that I'm like trying to like put myself in like, you know, 10-year-old Pooja's position. It evolved a lot. It evolved a lot. Like, I was so interested in so many different things. Like, I thought I wanted to be a doctor, and then I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, and then I thought I wanted to be a policymaker, and then I worked in nonprofits. I think like gathering all of that knowledge was informed me to who I am today. I don't think I ever dreamt of being a business owner in the sense of like being an entrepreneur and building something. I did think about having my own dessert business and did not equate that to being an entrepreneur, right? Like, I really romanticized it to like, oh, I got to get to make desserts all day. And And so like, I didn't really like see that through in my mind. I think I expected the things that anyone would expect, which is like, you know, I thought I would hit all the societal standards of being at this age, you know, getting married, having kids, buying a house, perhaps living in the suburbs, and my
the
life
American dream.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I will argue to say that I am living the American dream, actually. And that is not necessarily the American dream, right? So that's definitely the societal standards of what people expect of you. And I didn't live that, and that's fine. And I will, you know, I have the rest of my life to figure out how I want my life to look. And I have control over that, and I have some not control over that, and that's fine. What I am living is the American dream, though, right? My immigrant parents came here and built a life, and which allowed me to do something like this. If that's not the American dream, I don't know what is, right?
Exactly.
Like, I think that, like, this is exactly, and my parents have been so supportive from the very beginning, and they really, my dad especially, is just like, you need to build something. You're a builder. And to do this, like, with, you know, like, truly, like, you know, my own hard work and obviously so much support around me, I'm not going to diminish that at all. So many people lifted me up. But like, my thoughts and my dreams and making that come to life, I couldn't have imagined that as a kid, but I also don't think I knew what that looked like. But yeah. I think I'd be pleased. I think 10, 15-year-old Pooja would be pleased with where I am.
Yeah. That's so cool. So it sounds like your parents were really supportive, and a lot of people I talk to, especially from immigrant culture, there is this struggle with honoring our parents because our parents had a different expectation. You know, they came to this country to have this life for us.
Yeah.
And when I've talked to people who have made bold, different choices than what their parents expected, whether it is career, family, whatever it is, they get that rub. Did you ever have a struggle of honoring your parents versus driving towards whatever dream you're driving towards in each stage? Because it's been different each stage.
No, I have not had that experience. That has not been my experience. My parents were entrepreneurs themselves. They recently retired. But they were entrepreneurs my entire life. I saw the ups and downs of owning your own business my entire childhood and my entire growing up. I know how difficult it could be. I knew the struggles. I knew the joys. I knew it all. And through that, they were nothing but supportive when I wanted to start my own. My mom has been my mom is my everything. She is like my emotional support for everything. But my dad, I almost want to say that, like, he really wanted me to start my business. Like, he really was encouraging that as much as possible. I had this conversation with him. In my mind, I was like moving towards starting Malai. And it was like, you know, it was like that interim period of like, should I actually do this or should I not? And I talked to a lot of people, obviously my parents included. And my dad said to me at that time, he was like, I was in business school at the time. I was in my second to last semester in business school, and I was recruiting for jobs simultaneously as I was like, oh, there's this idea that I have, right? And my dad said to me, you're going to get a job and then what? And I was like, sorry, Dad, I don't understand what you're saying. And he was like, you're going to make, I don't know, pick a number, $150,000. Then what? And I was like, I'll make $150,000. Really don't understand what you're saying. He was like, the second year, you'll make $200,000. Then what? And I was like, Dad, I think you should use your words. Like, I don't know what you're saying. And he was like, it's time for you to build something. You're a builder, built. So I think about that a lot. I think about that, especially when things get really tough with Malai, that I'm just like, I'm a builder. Like, if someone believes that I'm a builder, I need to believe that I'm a builder.
And, you know, it feels like he was calling out in you what he saw. Because I think too often, especially if you were the kid that like did all these extracurriculars and worked really hard and all that, and you're just doing all it, which I think as adults, we do that too. And he saw all of that in you and called it out. So it was plainer to your eye, because obviously you are a builder, like all the different components that it takes to build a business where the end result is to serve people, to make them happy. You need those types of skills. And he saw that in you, which is amazing, especially for Indian women.
I think so too. I mean, like, I think, you know, we never, in my household, we were never, like, it was never like a step down that we were, I have a sister and it's just the two of us, and that we were women. Like, it was always go after your dreams, dream big, dream as big as you can be, as you can dream. Like, it was always that. But I, like, my sister, I think a lot of second children can attest to this. My sister was the golden child. My sister was, like, did everything exactly how you're supposed to do it. And I was like, I often say that I peaked in high school. Like, I certainly was, you know, an overachiever, but not to the level that my sister was. And so this fit me, right? Like, to do something, I'm not like, this isn't an advancement in my career. This is actually fulfilling a passion. This is actually, again, going back to building, it is building something, but you're starting from scratch and it's a puzzle and you have to figure it out and you have to be nimble and there's a grit involved and there's labor involved and you have to be quick thinking and you have to pivot quickly. That's not necessarily a golden child path, right? That's not a golden child route. And so this actually did fit me. So it wasn't even that, like, my dad saw how, maybe it was, I don't know, this isn't an interview for him, but like, I don't think it's necessarily that he saw what I was doing. I think that this was fitting for my personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously it is, because look at you now. And it's so interesting. You know, some people who listen and they're younger, like 20, college or whatever, I think a lot of people have this expectation that they're going to have it all figured out and they're going to be on the track they're always going to be on when they're 25, when they're 30, that kind of thing, and expect almost like this, I put in the work and then it's going to be slam dunk. And most people I talk to that are 40s, 50s, they're like, no, totally not. And I feel like that's your story too. I feel like you've done significant things in each stage of your life. And so do you think that if someone is listening who wants to be an entrepreneur, start a business, they should have this expectation it's going to take a long time, or can it be a multiple path? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that there's no two entrepreneurial journeys that are the same. Mm-hmm. And obviously we all know about all the unicorns, right? Like, we all know those businesses that went from 0 to 100 within like the first 2 years. I'm not one of them. Malai's not one of them. Mm-hmm. We've always trended in the right direction. We've had slow and steady growth. You know, we don't have outside VC money. Like, we, you know, I bootstrapped for a very, very long time. And so our journey's different. And so do I think that, you know, do I think it'll be a quick exit for your business? It might be. Like, you might have different resources than I did. I was recently asked, actually, in a panel, that if I could go back and change anything about the business, what would I change? And I answered, and I don't think that this was actually received very well, but like, I answered by saying I wouldn't change anything because I made decisions based on the circumstances and the resources that I had at that current moment. And if I had to change anything, I would have to change the entire thing that's surrounding me, right? So like, I made decisions based on the information that was given to me. That's all I could do at that time. And I had resources that I could use and I had resources that I didn't have. And so that's what I'm saying, that like, what was available to me and what I made available for myself is all I could do to advance Malai. And that might be a completely set of different resources for another person who's starting a business.
Okay. So as I hear you talking about these different experiences that have informed you. What I want to talk about, I was born and raised in New York around multicultural whatever. You're from North Carolina. How did that also affect your upbringing, your goal setting, your relationships, just being growing up in the South?
Yeah. Well, I was born in Pennsylvania and spent the first 10 years of my life in Pennsylvania in the Northeast. We were 2 hours away from New York. And I think that informed a lot of my experience in North Carolina because honestly, like this has a lot to do with my age. Under 10 is a very innocent time. And I don't think people notice your like their otherness as much as they would as they grow up. But all of a sudden at 10, I was thrust into a Southern high school, a middle school rather, and which is worse. So I was other, not only because of my brown skin, but I was other because I was from the North. And so I think that that really shaped my experiences because I was really, I didn't notice that I was Indian in Pennsylvania. I don't know if that makes sense, but like it was never pointed out to me in the same way that it was in North Carolina. So not only was it pointed out to me that I have a different skin color, I'm different in general, my name suddenly became a thing, like I was telling you about before. But I also was, I was pointed out for being Northern, and I was so proud from being from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I was like, I loved being Pennsylvanian. And so something that I was categorized as other, that I was never categorized as other before, was something I was deeply proud of. It was something that was deeply rooted as my identity. And so that was my first instance of owning who you are, right? And not wanting to change that. I didn't want to change the fact that I was from Pennsylvania. One of my very early memories from North Carolina was, and this is like something that like, it doesn't even seem true, right? But like, there was this one teacher, and she would greet by saying, hey, and I would respond by saying, hi. And she's like, hi is so Northern. That's not even true, right? Hi is universal. Hey is universal too, just hey. For reference.
Right, that's funny.
But she would, it was like a little tease, right? It was a little tease that like, oh, you're so Northern, like you only say hi. And that was like from the very beginning. And I love this teacher. But it was like constant pointing out that I was different, right? And it was almost as if I hung on to the high as long as I could, right? He said Appalachian and not Appalachian. I hung on to Appalachian for as long as I could, right? And like, you know, now I say y'all, like now there's a different kind of pride from being from North Carolina. I'm obviously not proud of everything that North Carolina represents, obviously. Just like, you know, there are parts of your identity that that's true for all parts of your identity, right? But like, I spent more time in North Carolina than I have anywhere else, right? Because especially because I went to college there as well. So from 10 to 22, I spent in North Carolina. Oh my gosh. New York City, I'm going to spend 12 years in this July. So maybe New York will be.
Wow, you're going to be an official New Yorker.
Maybe. but yeah, that was, it was like, I was so proud of it. I was so like steadfast into holding on my Northern roots that was my first kind of foray into like, look, you're different and you're proud of it. Cool. Mm. And like, then obviously there are other parts of it that like, you know, like I remember the first, like the second Indian girl that came into, I went to a private school. And so our classes were only 100, like our grades were only had 100 people. And there was an Indian girl that came in sixth grade. And I was fascinated by that because I was so in fifth grade when I started there, I was so otherized in so many different ways in a way, again, that I wasn't in Pennsylvania. So I was so otherized. I was so aware of my identity the entire time that I'm like, oh, I am different. I am Indian. I'm not like these people. Like, it was so clear to me that when she came, I was like, oh my God, mind blown. Like, this is like crazy. You're Indian like me. That's so cool. Do you call your mom this? Do you call, you know, like it was like such like giddiness. I found someone like me and I didn't even realize I was missing.
It's really great to hear how much you embraced your identity, all your identities, right? North versus, it took me Now I actually can only say Appalachian. I don't
know. I know, me too.
How do you say it? The North, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, Appalachian sounds so weird to me now. I agree. I've like fully embraced the Southernness now. Yeah. But yeah, it's so funny how like those parts, like you think define your identity, you know, like I won't say y'all.
Right.
Like, well, it's actually a really great way.
Yeah, now I say y'all all the time. Over here, one of the things, which I don't even think about, I'll ask somebody to do something. I'll be like, if you don't care to, can you do this? And then they're like, wait, what? And
yeah, I haven't heard that before either.
Oh, it means if you don't mind.
Yeah, right.
You're trying to be polite. But when you say, if you don't care to, it's like, I do care. Wait.
I care so much.
Right. So now you have lived in the North, lived in the South, lived in England. You've experienced so many different cultures, and you've also seen faith expressed differently. Like Bible Belt is completely different than the North. Has there been any specific belief system or faith that is actually informed the way you make decisions, the way you look at life?
That's a good question. I mean, like I wouldn't consider myself to be a religious person. I do come from a religious family, not necessarily like both of my parents are. My dad is very religious. My mom's not as much. And I do, like, my entire family has a lot of faith, like believes, like has a lot, they hold a lot of faith. And that has been entrenched in me. And so not in terms of decisions or anything like that. I think that, like, you know, the way that religion can play into culture is the way that it's worked for me too, that like, I the culture that I come from is Gujarati Jain. I think that informs my life in a way that culture informs life, but not specifically.
Totally switching gears.
Yeah.
So you and I met because of Chopped connections. So we met at Manish Chauhan's restaurant. I worked on Chopped. And actually, what's really funny, I don't have actually Food Network channel. And so I didn't know you won Chopped Sweets. But when we were first opening all our stuff that came from New York so we could film in Tennessee, it was all these Chopped Sweets ingredients. And I saw all the different options that were there.
So
and then I found out you had won. I'm like, wait, an Indian woman won this competition? That's amazing. You were involved with Food Network even before you competed on Chopped. How did you originally get involved with that? Because I get these questions all the time of like the BTS in the Food Network
sure,
world.
Of course.
How did you stumble into that?
Yeah. Well, they weren't related. I entered business school because I wanted to, you know, I didn't have that much business acumen, and I wanted this dessert business, right? And so I felt like I needed that next step and gain those skills before I did that. And so I needed to make a shift. Like, I was in urban planning, I was in fair and affordable housing. So I didn't have any food experience. Formal food experience. And so I did what a lot of people do, which is like at 29 years old, I applied to be an intern at the Food Network. And I remember the interview, and she was just like, the woman was just like, you are overqualified. And I was like, that's fine. Like, I'm aware that like my qualifications are not meeting what you need. However, it doesn't matter. Like, I need a step into the food industry. And she was like, cool. And so I was an intern, and, you know, I did interny things and met a lot of great people. But it was for a semester. And I think that the Food Network was going through a lot of restructuring at the time as well. I was in a very businessy part of Food Network, not necessarily the content part of it. And so like I had a semester with them, and I kept in touch with a couple of people, but that was really it. Like, that's where it kind of ended. I did a business school project with them, which was years later, because this was a couple of years into starting Malat. So I got a cold email being like, we're doing a desserts version of Chopped, and would love, I mean, like, I had to go, would love to, like, you know, interview you. And so I had to go through this entire interview process. And I have to say, Jess, like, the entire time of the interview process, like, I was just like, why am I doing this? I'm not trained. They're not going to accept me. Why do I keep doing this? I should tell them no. And then when they finally were like, we accepted you, I almost said no. Like, I almost said, oh, like, I don't want to be on this. It was so, like, obviously imposter syndrome comes in so many different ways. I've never felt it so strongly than that entire thing, like that entire experience. Because like was a business owner. Like, of course I like creating recipes and things like that, but that's not what I'm trained to do. To know that, like, it was just like, I was going to be so exposed, and to, you know, like, it was a reflection of me, a reflection on my business. And like, I didn't know if I wanted to go through that, but I felt like I was in too deep. And so I said, yes, like, it was just like, okay, there's like people pleasing part of me. And so I said, yes, but like, I truly like was like, what have I gotten myself into? What have I gotten myself into? Went through the entire, this was October of 2019 that I filmed, and had all the rounds. Like, the first round, I honestly should have been eliminated, but someone made a mistake. So survived that round. And honestly, the next two rounds, I kicked ass. Like, I really like found my footing and like was able to create really great dishes. And the feedback that I got from the judges was really positive. And I won, right? I have this distinct memory of you've been chopped and my dish wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I wasn't filmed, like, they weren't filming me, but if you see it, you can see my, like, the second half, like the lower half of my face. And it was almost as if you can tell that it hit me that I won. And like, you can see my mouth going like,
aww.
It just like hit me that I won. And I think that that was so validating in terms of like, not only am I creating this business, but I have a damn good recipe, and like I'm creating really delicious products, and that I should be proud of what I created. Like, it was really validating for me for that. So like, I'm really glad I went through the experience. And then kind of the second part of that is that it aired the end of March of 2020, right when things were just like falling apart. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was also just a moment of celebration and joy at a time when there were none of those things.
Right.
And so like, I think that like both of those, like actually winning in October, and then on top of that, for it to be airing right when New York went into lockdown, was really special.
That's amazing. And everybody was watching because they were just sitting at home anyway.
Everyone was watching. Yeah. I have this crazy story because like, obviously that was a really hard time for a lot of businesses, and no one knew how long it was going to last. And so, you know, we had payments, we had, you know, payables, and we had, you know, we had a lot of, but there was nothing incoming. And I remember, you know, like we were like looking at what the aid resources were, and there was nothing really available. Like, everything was still trickling in. No one knew what was happening. God, that time was so wild. And I remember that I called up my dad and I was like, oh my God, Dad, like if these payables are due, Malai is going to go negative on Monday. And first time ever, right? Like, I had worked so hard up until that point, and like, first time ever. And my dad was like, honestly, Pooja, there's nothing you can do. That's where his faith comes in, right? And
yeah.
Like, he was like, there's nothing you can do. And I was like panicking, panic, like super panic, like stress beyond belief. And I have this really, really bad habit of not opening my mail when it comes in. And so I have a stack of mail. So I'm like starting to open through it. And the chopped winner's check was there.
Wow.
And deposited it right away. And was just like, it was this moment of like, Chop save me, you know, like it just like, I never was in that position again, knock on wood. I was never in that position again. And it was just such a relief. And so like Chopped for me was all such positive things in so many different ways.
That's amazing. Will your winning recipes be in the cookbook?
That's a very good question. So yes and no, there's some of them are.
Okay.
And some of them are on Malai's menu.
Oh, okay. Yum. That's exciting. Okay. So I know when I was cooking on our news station, when I was personal chefing and doing chop, there's this kind of mentality that people have like, oh, like you're on TV, you're famous. What was the reaction to you with the Indian community to your new celebrity status?
I think the timing of it was really interesting again, right? So like, you know, I had a really great marketing person on board who really capitalized on everything that she could, considering that we weren't open. And that we only really had our nationwide shipping to go off of. But people were really, really supportive and really excited. Like to this day, it's now 4 years later, we're really at a store in DC. And our project manager in DC, I interviewed them and we decided to work together. And then all of a sudden I get a text from her and she's like, I'm sorry, were you on Chopped? Like, you looked so familiar, but she's like, I've watched the episode. My son watches it. Like, it was just like so much like, like that's so exciting. And yeah. Like 4 years later, I love that that's still a thing.
I love that story. And it's really fun. And it gives you this platform to really share your heart of what you're going for. I love it. All right. Last couple of questions. Your beverage of choice, chai, tea, coffee, another beverage. What is your like go-to?
So chai, like the traditional masala chai, is my favorite beverage. But usually Monday through Friday, I have black tea with chai masala. So no milk, black tea with chai masala, a little ginger, honey, and lemon. So that's my Monday through Friday, trying to stay good kind of thing. Yeah. And then Saturday and Sunday, I have regular masala chai.
Yeah, yum. And you do have a flavor like that in your ice cream.
You have a masala chai ice cream, yes.
Yep, which is delicious. For people who are listening, who are hesitant about making a bold move in their life, what would you say to them?
I would say cut out all the noise. You have your track in front of you. Run your race. Do your thing. You know what's best for you. So keep on running your own race.
That's great advice. And is there anything that you would like to share that's coming up for you that we kind of alluded to already, but what should people expect from you and Malai?
So, we talked about the cookbook, so that's coming out next year, which is very exciting. Then we are opening up a Washington, D.C. location in May of this year, so just a couple of weeks from now, which is very exciting. We're also going to open a Manhattan location, hopefully very soon as well. Stay tuned.
Wow. No, that's so amazing. Pooja, thank you so much for spending your time with us. I know that you are busy everywhere, and it's so exciting to hear all the ways that you are just bringing joy to everybody. Oh, and then if they don't come into your shop, where else can they get your ice cream?
So if you're in the Northeast or in the Mid-Atlantic starting in April, we're in grocery stores. So across from Connecticut all the way down to Virginia. And then we also ship nationwide through Gold Belly.
If anybody's looking for the perfect gift for graduation, Mother's Day, Father, like, you should be sending Gold Belly, because I actually have a friend who got a gift of, I think, a 6-pack from Malai, and he was just over the moon. Like, and I saw it on Instagram. I'm like, I know the owner. He's like, stop it. I'm like, yeah, she's amazing, just like her ice cream. So thank you again, Pooja, for joining us and sharing your life with us.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Being Brown and Bold podcast. Check out our links at beingbrownandbold.com to see a listing of all our shows. You can always find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the web. We'll be back again to drop our next episode with another uplifting conversation. If this podcast or episode resonates with you, would you help us and share it with others? Until next time, from all of us, be wise and be bold.